brand new episode of the Kevin O'Connor Show is coming up next. Welcome back to another episode of the Kevin O'Connor Show. Today, I'm bringing on Dan Titus, fantasy basketball analyst from Yahoo Sports. We talk about a lot. Lakers and Wolves from Monday night. Lakers getting blown out. And then we get into a bunch of NBA trends. What's real? What's not? What are we to believe? A lot of different topics. Really great conversation. Then towards the end, a little bit of fantasy basketball corner. I threw some fantasy questions at Dan Titus. So if you're a fantasy basketball player, that's definitely worth listening into. Hope you enjoy the show. Coming up next is Dan Titus. Here with Dan Titus from Yahoo Sports for a check-in with some of the biggest trends happening around the NBA. Dan, let's start off with what we saw on Monday night in the NBA with the Lakers getting trounced by the Minnesota Timberwolves. It has not been great for the Lakers. They were 12-9 on the season. They've lost 5 of 7. LeBron James, worst stretch of his career maybe. 24 missed three-pointers in a row, efficiency down, not getting to the rim as much. AD slipped a bit as well. LeBron looks like a guy who's about to turn 40 years old. True or false, Dan? The Lakers are cooked. It's done. It's over. No more championship contention, and maybe not even second-round contention for that matter.
Yeah, I don't think that the Lakers are cooked yet, man. This is a brutal stretch in the season. I mean, They're playing again on Wednesday, and that will be 5 games in 7 nights. Like, that is just a brutal stretch, even for the Lakers. I mean, LeBron, obviously 40 years old. Right now, I think you're just seeing a lot of tired legs. On Monday night, that was the case. I mean, they came out, played great defense in the first quarter, but then after the second quarter, man, it was a wrap. That game was over. I mean, you could just see LeBron just really pressing. And the three-pointers, I mean, 0 for his last 24, he has no legs. And I mean, even the accuracy here, man, he had an air ball in the third quarter. He hit the left side of the rim in the second. It's bad. So I think he just needs some rest. I think the mileage and the minutes played are really starting to catch up to him. So this is more of a question for me of like, what can the Lakers do to really take some of that burden off of LeBron? And I know that's the age old question. How many years can this guy continue to do this and like be the anchor for every team that he plays on? But I think now we're seeing the Lakers don't have a lot of ball creation. They don't have a lot of people that can get the ball downhill and create. They're running out of options, and I think they can't continue to ride on this horse for much longer, else he's going to tap out.
I mean, like you said, he looks tired, and that's the concerning thing for me overall when you consider this is a team that even when LeBron had his great games, like his game against the Kings earlier this season, his best game of the season, his best stretch, they still needed more ball handling. They still needed more creation. And so we're talking about a team that needs a trade. We're talking about a team where LeBron James currently, he turns 40 later this month, as everybody knows. He looks like a guy who's about to turn 40 right now. And Anthony Davis, after starting the season looking like the MVP, or at least an MVP contender, his play as of late has declined. He has not been quite as impactful, quite as consistent, quite as dominant. So J.J. Redick before the game is saying, you know, their 20-game start, when they were 12-8 entering the game, it's been uneven, it's been inconsistent. Now they're 12-9, it's 100% true. But when you consider all of these things, I have a hard time believing in them as even fringe contender right now without some type of big trade. I just don't know if that trade is actually out there for the Lakers.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of discussions of like, I mean, are they going to get some of these veterans? You know, do they make a move for Vucevic? Do they make a move for Jeremy Grant? All these moves.
Did they move the needle, Dan?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Who? That's the key question. Does Zach LaVine move the needle? Is he the guy?
Does that move? I don't know. They may be out of moves. I mean, this is why you have Rob Pelinka. Can he swindle somebody in Clutch Sports? Can they figure out who's going to be the missing piece to kind of take some of that load off of LeBron? And I just don't know that we found it. I mean, even in this Minnesota game, it was pretty apparent that this Lakers bench is also in trouble. They got nothing out of their bench tonight. I mean, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Naz Reid, and Dante DiVincenzo just went to work. And just, I mean, what was the differential? 41 points to like 18 for the Lakers. between the tiredness and the reliance on a 40-year-old and AD, a guy that seems to be taking plays off. I mean, Rudy Gobert was out working him tonight. So that's just a red flag for me. And while I think that they're not dead in the water, I still feel like they're a top 10 team in the Western Conference. I mean, you can kiss any kind of championship hope goodbye unless they can make a crazy move at the deadline here for somebody that's going to at least take some of that burden off of LeBron.
So I think, you know, one of the things with the Lakers when it comes to those tired legs we're talking about, that gets me to my next trend on my mind for this NBA season. And this is a not quite a league-wide thing, but a star-wide thing for a lot of guys who are on that Team USA team. Tatum, White, KD, and Edwards have all been awesome this season, but AD started amazing. He's regressed recently. LeBron looks 40. Steph's volume's been down, and he's also banged up. Devin Booker's numbers are dipping. Jrue Holiday's efficiency is way down from last season. Embiid, everybody knows the story with him. It's been a horrible year for a lot of different reasons. Halliburton has slipped. Bam Adebayo's regression is the main reason why the Miami Heat have been underwhelming. So all of these guys, most of these guys that were on that Team USA roster, they get gold, but they practice hard this summer and played a ton of tough games. Do you believe that there's something to this with these stars that played on Team USA factoring into their declines we've seen this season?
To a certain degree, yeah, because I actually did a brief study on this for fantasy purposes because I've always been a little bit concerned of players that play an extended postseason run and then to have an Olympic play as well. You don't really get that much time for rehabilitation and rest and getting that offseason that you typically have. Anthony Davis is a guy that typically zones out, doesn't touch a basketball for months, and then he comes back ready to go. He didn't have a chance to do that this year. And it's really interesting that this is really only impacting the USA players because Giannis is playing the best basketball of his career. Nikola Jokic is still putting up MVP numbers. I mean, even Yabusele and Victor Wembanyama are having great seasons here. So maybe it is the practice environment that sent Kawhi Leonard home. Like, hey, man, you can't hang here. Clearly, you're too injured. But I think we're seeing so much of a swing of injuries coming to those star players that played that prolonged offseason that, hey, they might have needed more additional rest coming into this season. I think the biggest glaring person is Joel Embiid, who we still can't really even figure out his knee situation and the extent of how bad it actually could be.
I mean, and I, from what I understand, is they practice hard. Like, they were really tough, intense workouts and practices that those teams had on their off days. And that wasn't supposed to be the case. It was supposed to be more relaxed practices, but it became very hard practicing under Steve Kerr as head coach. And maybe that is a factor for a lot of those guys. But then again, you could also, as I said, look at Tatum or KD. KD obviously missed some time, but then Anthony Edwards, yeah, who has been tremendous. And tonight wasn't his best night overall, but the Minnesota Timberwolves do get the win. They are 10-10 now on the season after going all the way to the Western Conference Finals last season. Quick snapshot look at the Western Conference standings, Dan. OKC and Houston, 1-2. Then Memphis, Golden State, and Dallas. Lakers hang on by a thread there. And then the play-in teams, Clippers, Suns, Nuggets, and Spurs. And then you have five teams on the outside looking in. The Wolves, the Kings, the Blazers, the Jazz, and the Pelicans. Pelicans and Jazz, like, they're done. Get out of here. Blazers have been feisty. The Kings stink, but they have a lot of talent. And then the Wolves, 10-10, barely up and down for them. Do you agree or disagree with me that of those five teams on the outside looking in of the West top 10 right now, the Wolves are the only team with any chance of getting into the playoffs?
The only team, I mean, I know everyone's down and out on the Sacramento Kings at this point, but I think that they're going to right this ship at some point. I think Mike Brown made the right decision by inserting Malik Monk into the starting lineup for what seems to be the foreseeable future. I think that was something that needed to happen a long time ago. He's just been an instant offense guy that gives them a spark that, honestly, we're not getting out of a lot of players outside of De'Aaron Fox and DeMar DeRozan. So I still have questions about their defense. You know, Keegan Murray hasn't been as good this year from an efficiency standpoint, but at least he's getting a little bit more involved in that offense. But I think that's the only team that really has a chance to potentially maybe get into that play-in. But you're going to have to upseat some teams that are really hungry right now. The San Antonio Spurs, if they continue to surge here, I think that they're going to be a better team than the Kings. And the Nuggets being the ninth place, that's not going to hold. They've been playing without one of their best players in Aaron Gordon. I think he's going to get back and they'll, you know, make their climb up the standings. And then you have the Suns sitting in eighth place when they've been without Bradley Beal and Kevin Durant for prolonged absences. So I think it's going to be a substantial climb here for both the Kings, but I think that the Minnesota Timberwolves are probably in the best scenario to actually get into the playoffs out of those bottom five teams.
Yeah, I mean, I think with Minnesota, the case is simply their defense is still great. It's still a top 10 defense. It's still an elite defense when Gobert is on the floor. It's really a matter of this team developing chemistry. Randall, it's been really up and down for him. Naz Reid has not been quite to the level he was last season, perhaps in part due to the inconsistent role playing with or behind Randall at times. The team just doesn't feel like it has that same rhythm and flow as it did last year. And I think if you're looking at the other teams, Kings, Blazers are out there. They, even if they snuck into the play-in somehow, they're going to get roasted. They're not a playoff team. The Wolves have the best player of all of those teams not in the playoffs in Anthony Edwards with the lead he seems to be taking.
Yeah, I think that that's fair. And I think, you know, there's obviously going to be an adjustment period for the Timberwolves actually having to integrate Julius Randle into the offense. There's going to be some seeding of touches. We've already seen some of the drama unfold and calling his squad soft, you know, from an emotional standpoint. I think all of that stuff, the fact that they're getting that out of the way early in the season, I think is a good thing for them long term. I think they're going to figure it out. Whereas the Kings, I think there's just so many offensive weapons there that I think they didn't address the defensive issues enough, where it's going to be kind of hard to kind of make that climb, being that they're already, you know, down 500 below that in the first, you know, 20 games of the season. So I think that the Timberwolves have some upside here. I wouldn't be surprised, though. I think they also need that next thing. And I don't know if, you know, there was rumors that Dante DiVincenzo was on the trade block. I think that's still really interesting because he went through a little slump. I think that might have been a little preemptive to just, you know, hey, let's move this guy out of the way. But Rob Dillingham didn't play on Monday, but I think he's a guy that's really exciting in the event that Mike Conley should ever go down. He showed out really well beyond just from a scoring perspective, but also as a playmaker.
Here's the thing with the Kings, Dan. It's not just concerns about the defense, lack of Sabonis rim protection. It's not just like the lack of size at the wing spot. It's not just these things. It's Mike Brown's coaching as well. I mean, in that game on Sunday against the Spurs, they were switching little Keon Ellis onto Victor Wembanyama, poor Keon Ellis on an island against 8 foot tall Victor Wembanyama, who just spun, turned, lays the ball up with ease time and time and time again, until they made a late adjustment and said, oh, wait a minute, why are we doing this? This isn't working. But Kings fans, Mike Brown goes from, you know, installing this beautiful offensive system, he looks like a rejuvenated head coach, to suddenly the same guy we kind of saw fizzle out in Cleveland as well. The same guy who looked like a average head coach. And with the Kings, I think it's roster issues, but it's also coaching issues. And that's why with the Kings, I just think the magic's gone. Light the beam has completely lost its luster. And I feel bad for Kings fans because I've been warning them about this for multiple years now, ever since they were the media darlings as the best young story and the best rising team a couple years ago. I've been saying, yeah, but this team needs some big changes to ever be more than just cute little story. And I believe we're at that point where those once younger teams, San Antonio, Oklahoma City, Houston, have more than surpassed Sacramento. And now they are that team that's below 500, could miss the playoffs once again. And I think they will miss the playoffs once again. Last year was the year they should have made a move if they were ever going to do it. They passed on the chance to go for Pascal Siakam because he didn't want to go there. They didn't do anything notable. And now I believe the window is shut on the Kings. And soon enough, the conversation will turn to, well, should they be trading this guy away or that guy away? Is De'Aaron Fox going to ask for a trade out? Soon enough, that'll be the conversation. And so I think if you are Fox, you should think about that. You should think about, I'm from Texas. Could I be an upgrade over Fred VanVleet? Can you imagine me learning from Chris Paul? and he's my backup in San Antonio, and I get to play with Victor Wembanyama for the next 10 years, how many championships could we win together? Maybe I should ask out instead of signing an extension here. If you're Fox, you should think about that. And if you're the Kings, you should think about it too before he potentially just walks or signs and trades elsewhere. So I think for the Kings, they're on thin ice at this point. I don't believe in them, and I feel bad for Kings fans because it was fun for a while, but I think it's about to get ugly again unless they commit to keeping those top 10 protected picks. It's top 12 protected this year, Dan. It's top 10 protected next year in two loaded drafts. Got Cooper Flagg is the prize up top this year, AJ DeBonta in next year's draft. It's about to get ugly for the Kings unless they commit to losing. Commit to keeping those picks and hopefully getting some lottery luck. That's my belief for the Kings. I'm sorry to be so sour. I feel bad.
So long term, though, it's probably a good thing that De'Aaron Fox didn't, if you're a Kings fan, that he didn't sign that contract extension, because that at least gives you some financial flexibility for the long term. If, you know, you want to tank, maybe you can get another player in there. You maybe get some sign and trade assets for him before you let him go for free. I don't know. Maybe there's an opportunity there where this could be a rebuilding opportunity because he just didn't, you know, you didn't pay him the bag, whereas I think other teams probably are biting themselves like, oh, man, the CBA is brutal. We have this ugly contract on our books. Now we're kind of stuck with it, whereas maybe they're not stuck.
Yeah, and I don't think for the Kings, like, let's just say they trade Fox and they get a haul back. I don't think they're going to be one of those, like, ugly, dismal teams like the Wizards. Where they're 2-16 and it's like, wait a minute, are we going to be the worst team ever? Like, they still have Devin Carter, who hasn't played this season. Yeah. Keegan Murray is impressive. They have some good quality young players on this team. Keon Ellis is still a younger guy. So I think for the Kings that there's still some bright spots on this roster that I don't mean to diminish. I just don't think the team has the coaching. I don't think Sabonis is great enough because of his lack of defense. And I believe that they're a team that's going to have to end up making some moves at some point, probably to get worse. We're going to take a quick break, a quick reminder to listeners to please subscribe to the Kevin O'Connor Show if you have not done so already. All right, Dan, we have five long winning and losing streaks going on in the NBA right now. We have three teams that have won six in a row. We have a team that has lost nine in a row and a team that has lost 14 in a row. Do you want to start with our winners or losers?
Let's go with the winners.
Okay, let's start with the winners, Sarah. The Milwaukee Bucks, they have won six games in a row. They've won eight out of nine games. They're now in fifth place in the Eastern Conference, only 1.5 games back from the 4 seed, only 3.5 back from the 3 seed. Their 2-8 start feels like a distant memory at this point. Andre Jackson starting games. Gary Trent Jr. is coming off the bench and thriving. AJ Green has taken Pat Connaughton's minutes off the bench. Chris Middleton is... his return is imminent, I'm told. Could be this week. He was possibly going to play on Tuesday. That is not going to happen, but he might return still this week. Dame and Giannis are playing better than ever together. And Giannis on the season, 32.9 points per game, 11.9 rebounds, 6.6 assists. And over this 9-game stretch in which he's played 8 of those games, he's averaging 34.5 points, 11 rebounds, 8.3 assists. He's dragged this Bucks team back over 500, back into the playoffs. I've got him back in the MVP conversation pretty easily in the top three right now. He might even be leading it when I do my next awards ballot check-in. But Dan, have we seen enough to say that the Bucks are back to being championship contenders after this recent stretch?
No.
I
would pump the brakes a bit because I think that while this is a great stretch and I think it's a testament to Doc Rivers doing something different than he usually does, you know, going to his younger bench to actually get some playing time, some valuable playing time to switch things up. I just don't know that this is sustainable. And relying on Chris Middleton coming back after having two bad ankles, I don't know that this is going to be something that you'll want to invest in long term. I mean, Giannis is playing probably the best basketball of anyone right now. I mean, he's shooting 74% at the rim. That's 10% better than league average.
Crazy.
Ridiculous. And then you have Damian Lillard, him trading off 25 points with 10 assist games. They're just locked in right now. And I think it's just a testament also to their commitment to defense. If you go before their 6-game win streak, they were what? 19th in defensive rating in the league. Even offensively, they were 22nd in offensive rating. No surprise, within this six-game stretch, they're top 10 in both. So I think that this is just a good run of Dame and Giannis finally finding that connectivity, that chemistry. Brooke Lopez has been pretty consistent to where he was last year. There hasn't been much regression there, which is a good thing. Bobby Portis is still holding it down. But yeah, I think that this is a good moment, but the Eastern Conference is garbage. So the fact that they're fifth just shows you how weak this conference is. And I don't think that they're really contenders. They're not anywhere close to the Boston Celtics. They're nowhere close to the New York Knicks. Yeah, I'd be hard pressed. They're definitely not anywhere close to the Cleveland Cavaliers. So while this is a good story and they've turned it around, I think that there's just going to be a middling playoff team that's probably going to get bounced in the second round, first or second round.
I think the argument in favor of what you're saying is that they haven't beaten anybody this year. They don't have any high quality wins. They just don't. They really don't. They besides that Houston win they had a couple weeks ago. Other than that, during the 6-game winning streak, Houston, which started it, then Chicago, Indiana, Charlotte, Miami, Washington. And coming up this week on Tuesday, they have Detroit. On Wednesday, they have Atlanta.
Eastern Conference wins.
Well, then they have Friday against Boston. That's a real barometer test for them. And then we have the play-in games being the NBA Cup games being scheduled. So there's a break in the schedule where you don't know who they're going to play exactly. And then Cleveland on the 20th. So they have at least two games that are going to be really good barometer tests before Christmas Day. We don't know what those other games are going to look like. Now, I think with what we've seen Giannis do this season, because even before they started winning games, things look different. Pat Connaughton was playing minutes. You had AJ Green was not playing. Andre Jackson was barely playing. Their defense was different. Dame and Giannis did not seem to have the same chemistry that they have right now. And Giannis has just ramped it up to another level. And so I think, is it fair to put them on the level of Boston? No. Or Cleveland? No. Or even the idea of what the Knicks can be? Sure. No. But they still have arguably the best player in basketball. And they still have arguably the guy who's going to be the leading MVP candidate moving forward. Because everybody has Jokic penciled in at number one right now. The Bucks have essentially the same record, Dan. The Nuggets are 10-8. The Bucks are 10-9. The Nuggets are the 9 seed in the West. I know the West is way stronger than the East. But Giannis is just dragging this team. He is an all-time great player, and he is playing some of the best basketball he ever has. The mid-range jumper's falling more than it ever has. He's dominating at the rim. He's got Damian Lillard. Chris Middleton's about to come back. Brooke Lopez still playing at a high level. Doc has seemingly figured out this rotation. So I have a hard time saying that they're at least not on the fringes of championship contention at a minimum. You got Giannis.
You got playoff contender in me, but like championship, this roster is too old. Even with Giannis, like they're 2-6 on the road. To me, this is like the Lakers fool's gold of like, hey, let's get some wins and pat our stats and look like we're good. But as soon as we leave the home arena and actually have a test in front of us, we wind up falling on our face. So like, I just need to see them prove it more. Get some high quality wins against some good teams, win on the road, and then I'll start taking it a little bit more seriously.
I understand. I could only understand that if we did this podcast next Monday evening after they face Boston on Friday, I think we'd have a lot more clarity with who they really are, because that Boston game will be a lot more telling. Let's move on to the Magic, another team that has won 6 games in a row in the Eastern Conference. They're 15-7 on the year, dude. Banchero's played only 5 games. They've won 12 out of their last 13 games, which includes those 6 in a row. They have the number 3 defensive rating on the season, the number 1 defensive rating over this last 13-game stretch, and the number 12 offensive rating. That's the thing that's so surprising to me. Their defense, no surprise, their defense is incredible. But the offensive rating being number 12 over this last 13-game stretch, in the games Banchero's played, none of them. Franz Wagner, 26.6 points per game, 7.1 assists per game to only 2.1 turnovers, 6 rebounds per game. Banchero says he could be back by Christmas. The Banchero-Wagner fit is a topic for another day. But with what Franz Wagner is doing right now, Could you have seen this coming with him leading this team the way in which he has, without Paolo Banchero leading them to so many victories, Dan?
To this degree, no. But we talked about it on when the last time I was on your pod for potential breakouts, and we both had Franz yes. Wagner pegged for that breakout. And while I saw him as an all-star type of player, he's now reached all NBA type player. And the way that he just, I was trying to find a comparison for him because like he's the perfect balance of like efficiency. Defensively, he stands out. He doesn't turn over the ball. He's just a really efficient, solid basketball player. And when you combine that with the pieces that Jamal Mosley has put around him, you know, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, over the last three games, he's been lights out. He looks like he's finally fallen into form.
Finally. Dude, he was shooting like 20% to start the year.
It was bad. So he had the birth of his kid. So I don't know. Maybe that was weighing on his mind. He's like, all right, now I got that out of the way.
The baby's here. Anti-Fred VanVleet when he was a new father years ago. He scored 50 points a game.
But now it just seems like things are starting to work. And even when they gave Wendell Carter Jr. that you know, affordable contract, he was playing well before his injury. But now that Goga Batadze has been inserted into that starting lineup, he's been playing outstanding. They've been 11-3 since he's joined the starting lineup. And I don't know that he's going to be moving out. He just gives them another element. You know, he's actually an underrated playmaker. He's averaging 3 assists over his last three games, 10 points, 10 rebounds, and five stocks. Like, they're just locked in this to see Anthony Black playing so well and Mosley being so willing to just go give his younger players a shot, play within each other, lock in on defense, and then play through Franz. I mean, I don't think anyone expected Franz to be this good at this point in the season without Paolo Banchero. So it's going to be – I would love to hear that conversation about what's going to happen when Paolo comes back, because you can't stop this train, man. Franz is here, and he's not going anywhere.
I mean, to me, Paolo's going to have to adjust. But I think more than anything else, the rest of the Magic are going to have to accept these guys both are deserving to be high-usage players. They both are deserving to have nearly 20 shots per game. To me, it's on everybody else to adjust more than anything else. And for those guys to right. figure out how do we do this together with two-man actions, dribble handoffs, big pick and rolls with 2 6'10" guys. How do we play together in order to get us these touches and these scoring opportunities and playmaking chances? Because they both are deserving. Franz is the better playmaker of the two, I believe. Banchero, you can argue, is the higher upside guy. He's had a 50 bomb. He is, you know, in theory, the LeBron light type of guy with his body type getting to the basket. To me, I've always felt Franz is the better overall high floor player because of his defense, because of the playmaking. And in theory, he could become a better shooter. He's 80%+ from the free throw line in his career going all the way back to college. It's just it hasn't been consistent from three. It's been better this season. He's doing it off the dribble. He's doing it off the catch. Those guys are going to have to grow like Tatum and Brown did for years in Boston. But it's also about the pieces around them, allowing them both to flourish. So I look forward to seeing how that's going to play out between those two guys once Banchero does return. He said to Anscape, he does this like a season diary with Mark Spears over at Anscape. He said he thinks he can be back by December. By Christmas, so we'll see if that ends up happening. The third team with a 6-game winning streak is the Memphis Grizzlies. Their wins have not been overly impressive. They've beaten the Sixers, the Bulls, the Blazers, the Pistons, the Pelicans, and the Pacers. Not the best opponents, but they're getting healthy. Zach Edey's going to be returning soon since he's been out since mid-November. Are you buying the Grizzlies as a sleeper contender this season?
I did pick Taylor Jenkins as my coach of the year pick. Right now, that's seeming to trend up, but I think I buy them because they continue to get wins, albeit like not the greatest opponents, but their ability to get something out of their depth, I think, is something that needs to be appreciated. What we're seeing from Santi Aldama, what we're seeing from Scottie Pippen Jr., they just continually have these guys that are ready to step up in the moments whenever Desmond Bain or Ja Morant go down. And the fact that Zach Edey is still out, you know, Brandon Clark, he's been coming back from a couple of season-ending injuries. He looks pretty good. There's just something about this Memphis team that just has this grit. You know, Marcus Smart is playing his dog mentality again, whether he's coming off the bench or starting. they have an edge to them. And I think that this is going to be a dangerous team when they get fully healthy. That's a huge if, because John Moran has yet to prove to us that he can sustain a full season healthy. But I think from what we've seen, how they can just hold the line and get these guys back, I think that's something to definitely respect about the Memphis Grizzlies. And I think being 14-7 right now, I mean, they could easily be a top three seed for the rest of the season, assuming they can stay healthy.
Dude, Scottie Pippen Jr. One of the best stories in basketball, dude.
Unbelievable.
I saw a stat. Scottie Pippen Jr., I believe it was the week before Thanksgiving or something like that. The last player to record 25 points, 8 assists, and 80% field goal at the United Center, the home of Michael Jordan. Scottie Pippen Jr. did it in late November. The last guy who did that was Scottie Pippen.
Scottie Pippen
back in 1995. Yeah, what a stat. I know it's cherry picked, but still incredible.
No, that's dope, man. You love the father. See, that's a good father son, you know what I'm saying? Like stat comparison. You don't, I mean, maybe Bronny will get there one day, but
well, LeBron James is playing like Bronny James as of late. That's a good stat comparison, right?
Hey, at least Bronny got Bron got 10 points. God forbid his streak of 1,243 games of scoring 10 plus points is intact. I was just watching him chuck at the end of the game there. I'm like, yo, this dude is definitely getting 10 points.
I got to get to 10. Then JJ can take me out. Oh, my God, dude. Crazy. I thought he wasn't going to get it. I thought tonight was going to be the night that he didn't get it.
I had the tweet loaded up. I'm like, oh, the streak is broken. No, not happening.
Let's move on to the losers of 9 in a row. The New Orleans Pelicans, 4-18 on the year. They've been just decimated by injuries. Everybody knows Zion's been out. Other guys have been in and out of the lineup. Trey Murphy missed a ton of time. Herb Jones has been out forever, sitting on my IR in the Yahoo Fantasy League that we're all in for weeks at this point with the Pelicans. Here's my belief, Dan. It's time to blow it up. It's time to blow up the New Orleans Pelicans and trade everybody that's willing to be, you know, that a team's willing to trade for them, besides Herb Jones, Murphy, Missy, and Hawkins. Keep those four guys. Get rid of everybody else. Is it too soon for me to say, though, that the Pelicans should be blowing it up?
No. Why? They should have been blowing it up before that. I mean, Brandon Ingram, he hasn't contributed to winning in a long time. Like, even though they'll inch their way to the play-in tournament, they're always going to be like a first round exit. Like there's just something about Brandon Ingram that just doesn't generate confidence in like having like a playoff championship contending team. Couple that with Zion Williamson, who just has zero ability to stay healthy. I mean, it's no surprise they both fired their agents because clearly they weren't finding the market that could get them somewhere else. Zion's been saying he doesn't want to be in New Orleans since he got there. So I don't know if that's just an omen that's just been kind of lingering around. Sam Amick was talking about how there may be some verbiage in his contract that the Pelicans could maybe skirt around paying him that guaranteed money. I don't know if it's going to come to that, but CJ McCollum could definitely go to a contending team and contribute off the bench as a sixth man. I think Brandon Ingram can probably find a home on some team to just absorb contract. And Zion Williamson, who knows? But this team has to blow it up. We've seen enough. They have too many good players that they were just fighting to get into the lineup. You know, Herb Jones hasn't been healthy this season, but I'm expecting that he'll be back probably in the next couple of weeks, maybe in the next week. Trey Murphy, we haven't seen enough of him because he's been hurt. Just all the injuries have kind of stifled their development. But I think also when you have those veterans that don't really have a history of leading their team to victories, it's just hard to trust anything that they really have. So blow it up. Keep the assets that you have in Trey Murphy, Herb Jones, Misi, who's been amazing. And DeJounte Murray, just because he probably can't move the contract right now. But yeah, they got to blow it up. It's time.
I mean, that's the tough part for them. It's like you say, like I say, blow it up, but then it's like, who's taking Zion?
Bro, did you say, who? Why is he getting, all right, back tattoo aside, bro, why do you have someone filming this when your ass looks so chubby right now? Like, what are you doing, bro? That's not helping your value on the trade market. You should be shredded, even though you got this hamstring injury. Clearly, you're not taking things seriously, and that's why other teams aren't wanting to get him. Like, bro, you can't stay healthy. As dominant as you are when you are healthy, it's not worth it.
So I've always had like a tough time keeping weight on and like, you know, losing it. Like it goes up and down for me, right? Like I'll go from 210 to 195, back up to 215, back down to 190, and all, it always fluctuates. I go through spurts where I eat like a pig, and I go through spurts where I eat totally healthy. So I can relate to Zion in that sense. But where I can't relate is where your job is to be in tip-top shape as a competitor, and you're getting paid $40 million to do it. And that's where, if I'm any other team, it's like, do we really want to make this bet? Is this really the guy we want to trade for? Because it's not like the Pelicans would trade him for nothing.
No.
It's not like they're not going to take something back or want something back of great value. He's still only 24 years old.
Right.
He still had amazing flashes. So it's not like you're going to get him for cheap. So if you're the Pelicans, yes, you might say, blow it up. You can probably trade Ingram easily. He's an expiring contract. You can probably trade CJ McCollum very easily. He's an expiring after next season. I think even DeJounte Murray, $30 million annually, it's a longer deal, but it's not terrible. It's not terrible. And some of the cheaper contracts, I would not trade Herb Jones. But if you did trade Herb Jones, $13, $14 million annually, you could get a lot for a guy like him. Trey Murphy, one of the best shooters in basketball, very good defender, does a lot of other things, could get a lot for him if you wanted to trade him. But I'm not sure who'd be trading for Zion and giving up a lot of value unless it's a team like the Nets. The Nets, they could trade the Ben Simmons expiring. They have a ton of other assets they could flip for a guy like him. Maybe they're the type of team that would just say, you know what, screw it. He wanted to come to New York. Brooklyn's the next best thing. Maybe here he'll be able to figure out if we can afford the next three years with him, and then he has a player option. No, he has four guaranteed years, that's right, besides the little weird intricacies of the deal that you're talking about. But maybe Brooklyn is the team that I think could be the Zion team. But other than that, I've got a hard time figuring out a destination for him.
Yeah, I think Brooklyn was the one that I was kind of targeting too, because I'm like, they have the perfect balance of like, they got expiring deals, they got vets they want to get rid of. It just seems like a natural fit. I just don't know if they, you know, want to invest in a guy that's so oft injured when they just dealt with Ben Simmons for the last couple of years. So I think marketability-wise, like I think Zion still does have some appeal there, especially being in a city like New York. So we'll see what happens. I'm curious about what they're going to have to package in order to make these deals work. Like CJ and Ingram, like, are they going to come with picks? Are they going to come with, you know, what's the deal construct going to really look like? Because I think all three of those guys, I think, don't really have very much appeal in terms of like, oh, cool, you're going to help me win now and take my team to the next level. Like, no, maybe McCollum, but again, that's going to be in a bench role, bench capacity, and the other two can't be trusted.
It's tough, man. Tough spot to be in. At least they are, you know, maybe you'd rather be the Washington Wizards, actually, because they're not a team that's trying to win. The Wizards are 2-16, losers of 14 games in a row. They currently have the third worst win percentage in NBA history at 11.1%. The worst is the Bobcats in 2012. They finished 70-59 in the lockout shortened season at 10.6% win percentage. And then the Sixers back in 1973 were 9-73 with an 11% win percentage. So Wizards are at 11.1%. They're on pace for 9 wins on the season. Are you taking the over or under 9.5 wins?
I would take the over. I think they can get to 10. Not going to shade over 10, though.
That's
it. It's the highest I can go.
Not on the Jordan Poole train? Some late March, April wins rattle off 3-4 in a row?
At least they're tanking right. You know, they're playing Malcolm Brogdon, even though, you know, Bub Carrington has shown that he could easily be the starting point guard for this, or at least the starting two guard for this team. But they're showcasing Brogdon to potentially get some trade value there. Kyle Kuzma continues to be injured. We'll see how long that lasts. I wouldn't be surprised if he's traded. But outside of that, man, like, I feel like they're actually tanking the right way. Alex Saar is starting to show some improvements on offense. Bilal Coulibaly has been a player that I've been really impressed with this season. When given the opportunity, whenever Kuzma's off the floor, he seems to shine. He's hit a little bit of a sophomore slump right now, but just looking at the numbers, I think he'll work his way out of it. So as bad as they look, and while they might have a historically bad season, I actually feel like their development actually looks pretty good for the long term. Whereas like the Pelicans, I'm like, there's not anything you can really do to get this right at the moment. Whereas like, we know what the Wizards are. They're a tanking team that's rebuilding, then they have some assets for the future. They're going to be invested heavily in the draft. So I think they're actually tanking the right way.
I mean, the best thing is to have a direction. And the Pelicans are one of those teams where they just feel stuck. Like, what do we do? The Wizards are like, capture the flag, baby. like losing is winning. Like, you're happy to lose and just feel development and feel like young guys are getting better on your team. And I mean, I understand why they're starting Malcolm Brogdon. They're featuring him, yada, yada, yada. But it pains me to see Carrington going from playing 30 plus minutes per game to below 20 per game. I liked watching Bub more regularly than I do watching old man Malcolm Brogdon, the president. No offense to him. I want to see him traded, go somewhere else and get more minutes for Bub.
Absolutely. Even Keyshawn George too, man. Same thing goes for him. I think he's a guy that I think we could see emerge a little bit more once Kyle Kuzma has moved. But yeah, I'm all for the youth movement. We'll see what happens with Jonas Valanciunas. I'd be surprised. Like right now, I think his value is like he's kind of doing what we expected in a timeshare right now. But it wouldn't be surprised if someone plucked him around the deadline just for some backup big depth for a playoff contender.
We're going to take a quick break. A reminder to listeners for next Tuesday's episode. Send some mailbag questions in to KOCshow@yahoosports.com. Coming up, I'm going to ask Dan some fantasy questions since he is, of course, Yahoo Sports fantasy basketball expert. All right, Dan. So James Harden, as of late, absolutely dominant last three games, averaging 34 points, 9.7 assists, 6.3 boards. Last three games looking more like vintage James Harden. On the year in Yahoo Fantasy for points, he is currently in the top 10, averaging 47.09 fantasy points per game. Did you think Harden still had this in him on the court in reality for the Clippers and to be that guy who can help carry a fantasy team?
So speaking for fantasy purposes, I did. I had him as a first round pick this year. So I have him in a few spots. In the back end of that draft, I thought that James Harden was going to be a huge value for fantasy managers. It was primarily because Kawhi Leonard, we didn't really know when he was going to be returning. And I think the one thing about James Harden that you can say, whether system or not, this man raises the floor for everyone around him. Ivica Zubac, another player that we talked about on the breakout show, how much better he's making Zubac. That assist combination is money. It's the top in the league right now. I believe coming into the night, AD and LeBron were right behind them. We're like two assists behind them. They didn't even have an assist tonight. So Harden and Zubac continue to be the best two-man combo in the game. Look at Derrick Jones Jr. having a career year in terms of a scoring perspective, and Norman Powell, largely considered just a bench guy, he's having a breakout campaign. And this is all off the heels of James Harden being consistent and just being a leader of this team. And I think when they get Kawhi Leonard back, whenever that is, this team actually has built a strong connection to, like, I think that their chemistry and their vibe with Tyronn Lue leading the way, they could actually make some noise as like a mid-tiered Western Conference team that could actually surprise. There are some red flags for me, though. I do think it's concerning that Harden has he's shooting the lowest true shooting percentage since his rookie season. So that encompasses his 3-point percentage, his field goal percentage, his free throws. But then also, if you look at his turnover rate, it's a top three turnover rate in terms of his career. So that's just a byproduct of having the ball in his hands a lot, having to do more. The usage is at, you know, record numbers. There's only been five players that have had a usage rate of over 30% at age 35 or older. James Harden's on pace to do that. So I think once Kawhi Leonard comes back, I think we'll see some of those efficiency gains improve. And I think James Harden is just a solid fantasy player and real life player. I think he's been extremely undervalued in the market. And I think that people kind of wrote him off a little bit too soon.
Clippers, top 10 defensive rating. Harden is helping keeping them afloat on offense. As you said, Zubac, Derrick Jones Jr., Norm Powell, potentially most improved player of the year. Though I think Ty Lue made a good point the other day. He's like, Norm Powell's always been this good. Powell was a 19-point-per-game guy just a few years ago. His usage is just way up, but also his efficiency is up as well. I do think there's been some improvements there, but he always has had some moments when he's been asked to score where he has, so it's cool to see that. One guy who's out for 2 weeks now, at least 2 weeks, that's LaMelo Ball, out with a calf injury. Trey Mann is also out. What are you expecting from Micić and LaMelo and Trey Mann's absence?
Yeah, I think Micić is a guy that can get you plenty of assists, and I think he's shown a good framework for a point guard. You know, he's going to shoot a decent percentage from the field, probably milling around 45%, get you the threes as well as steals. So with 2 weeks being out, I think this Charlotte Hornets team is a team you'll want to target in fantasy because they play six games across week seven, which is a two-week scoring period. So there's going to be plenty of opportunities for Micić to rack up assists, points, maybe low-end rebounds as well as steals. So I think he's going to be a person that you'll definitely want to grab in fantasy. I think he's still under 30% rostered right now. So I'd be curious, though. There was some chatter on Snapchat, which I didn't even really think people were still using for social media, but apparently Lonzo Ball does.
Is that true?
Apparently Lonzo Ball does, and he's saying like something might be happening soon. LaVar Ball was even saying that help could be coming to Charlotte. So I don't know. Maybe Charlotte makes a move for Lonzo Ball. I think that would be pretty interesting. I would love to see the Ball brothers play together. I think that they actually would complement each other really well. But, you know, we'll see what happens with the Bulls do. But I can't imagine Lonzo Ball's asking price is too high at this point, right? Like, the injury concerns are certainly real, but I don't know. He's flashed from what I've seen. You know, I think we talked about it before from when he was looking in the preseason, and I was like, wow, man, like, not only is this a great story, but he still looks like he still kind of has it a little bit.
I'm stuck on the Snapchat thing. Is that where LaVar Ball's disappeared off to? Is he like, does he have a dominant voice on Snapchat now? It's just like the social media platforms are so isolated. know, like, right? It just doesn't go to Instagram. It doesn't go to X. It doesn't go to Blue Sky. It doesn't go anywhere. Bruh, is that what's going on?
When I saw the screenshot of Lonzo post on Snapchat, I'm like, even looking at the font, I'm like, bro, what, this is like so 2015, 14 or something like that. And I'm like, I'm an old head. So like, I'm on IG, I got Blue Sky, you know what I'm saying? Like, Snapchat, like, okay. But I guess that's NBA life. I feel like NBA life, you got to be discreet. So it gets the immediate, like, things disappear. So, like, I get it.
For the girls, right?
Yeah. I don't know this to be true. I can only assume.
I would assume that's where Snapchat, you know, message me on Snapchat, that type of thing. You see that in the profiles.
100%.
I don't know. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. So LaMelo out 2 weeks. Micić looking like a good waiver wire pickup. Is he the best waiver wire pickup of this weird week? Can you describe this weird week, by the way? It's a double week in fantasy basketball because of the NBA Cup games next week, right?
That's right. Yeah, so Yahoo is the unique platform to combine week seven into 2 weeks. And I think I wouldn't be surprised if maybe that's altered next year because of the discrepancy of, you know, the second part of week seven is only going to be 3 days, Thursday through Sunday, because the NBA has to take the break from the championship game until the NBA restarts. So it's a bit wonky. There's several teams that play six games, but Micić is definitely at the top of the list of a player that I would want to add. Also like Yves Miesi. Had another great game tonight, despite the Pelicans getting blown out. Goga Bitadze is a guy that we talked about that I think is still supremely under roster, considering that he's still the starting center for the Orlando Magic. Another player I would also pick up is Quentin Grimes. Even though Klay Thompson may be on the verge of returning, Quentin Grimes has been playing extremely well, hitting the three ball. Still think that there's going to be some room for him to get some playing time with Najee Marshall out too, because he can play that two and three spot. But yeah, there's definitely, check out the playlist on Yahoo right now that has all of my waiver wire pickups for this upcoming week, as well as a little peek into the week ahead as well.
Now, tell me this. Let's tie this back to one of our conversations towards the beginning of the podcast in regards to the Orlando Magic. Let's say right now you're a Franz Wagner owner in your fantasy team, and you're riding this high right now, but you're a little bit nervous about the Paolo Banchero return screwing it all up. Would you consider Wagner a sell high player right now on the trade market? You got an owner like me. It might be me in our league that really wants Franz, and you're making good offers. Is Franz somebody that you'd actually consider trading right now?
I would probably vote against it. Like, it, I would say, said differently, I would probably wait until Paolo comes back, and then I would buy into Franz Wagner versus selling now. Because right now, what you're getting is a player. I mean, we talked about all of the incremental steps that he's made to improve his game. Even on the podcast last time, we talked about the ability to improve his three-point shooting. Surprise, he did. We thought it would positively regress back to his career numbers. Last year was an outlier. Everything to me of like looking at the advanced data suggests to me that this is for real. And when this is for real, I'm not selling high. I think you can appreciate the value that you got him. He's a fourth, fifth round pick. And right now he's providing second to third round value. So I would say enjoy the ride. Don't sell it. I think he's going to figure out how to be good with Paolo as well. And right now we're just getting a peek into how good this guy can really be in terms of his ceiling. But his floor, as you stated, is still substantially high. So this is a guy I'm not selling high on.
I was hoping you'd say to sell him so I could make some offers in our league.
Oh, but if you want to sell him, go for that. Hey, go for a top 20 player because you might get it right now. You really might.
This week, the top four teams are all facing off in our Yahoo Work League. You're right. Number one in the standings, most points, best record at 5-1. I am second at 5-1. Yes, you do this. I'm 5-1, but with like the eighth most points.
That's what we call great strength of schedule.
Yeah, I'm great strength of schedule. Am I the Bucks? Is that what I am?
That's actually really good. Yeah, pretty much are. But you're coming on though. Yeah. I see the team. It's definitely improving.
It's coming along. I traded for Cade Cunningham.
Huge.
Traded for
Cade. When he got hurt, but it's going to be better
later. It'll be better later. It's going to work out. That was a little bit of a buy low. So we're working it out. We have two teams that aren't setting their lineups. They're combined 0-12.
You got to get the free passes when you get them, you know? Hey, I don't make the rules. I'm just playing the game. Got to get the dubs. That's the name of the game. So gotta get the dubs. I'm not mad at it.
I look forward to facing off and taking you down, Dan.
Care to wager?
We'll see. Week nine. I just scrolled forward. Week nine.
Okay.
Dan,
I'm marking it.
Like you said, you do this. That's why I wanted to talk a little fantasy with you at the end here. Dan, I appreciate you joining the show tonight.
No doubt. Thanks for having me, KOC.
Thanks to Dan Titus for joining me on today's episode of the Kevin O'Connor Show. Thanks to Stone for producing it, and thanks to you for giving it a listen. Please subscribe if you have not done so already to the Kevin O'Connor Show, and give us a 5-star rating or a thumbs up wherever you're listening. It really does help out. Hope you have a great rest of your week.